Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 3 of Season 5 Movie on Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Jake Lewitt of the Deep Blue Sea podcast and the Con Air podcast. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Let me put some clothes on a second for this. Apologies for the camera.
If you must, you know. You know, maybe you want to go see Leonard Atkins, who's in a warmer climate. I don't know.
I'm good. I should definitely put some clothes on before doing that.
Probably. So minute three begins with a pan of the inside of the airport and ends with a news report that gives us lots of exposition.
Yes, we see a lot in this chapter.
Thankfully, we don't see too much. That's a good thing. Yes.
It depends on how far you zoom, I guess.
I don't know. Whatever you do on your own time, Jay, that's fine. Yeah. I stay away from those type of things. But everyone has their own personal preference, so that's okay.
Well, I hear that if you look close enough, you can see William Sadler's Shawshank and his Redemption.
Ooh.
In this chapter.
Possibly.
Look out for his Grim Reaper.
That's right. So yesterday we ended things by John entering the airport, and we heard some carols, and now the carol changes and we actually hear the song Carol of the Bells. Are you familiar with that Christmas carol?
I think it is in Home Alone. But okay. It is one I am less familiar with. I'm more familiar with We Wish You a Merry Christmas.
Right.
I know of it.
Okay,
it's a very kind of operatic.
Yes. It was written by the Ukrainian composer Mykola Leontovich in 1914, and they actually adapted it in 1922. They did an English version of it in order to, you know, I guess people in America could get more of more pleasure out of it, you know, by understanding what the lyrics are. I'm not going to go into all the you know, about what type of music it is. That stuff I'll leave for David. He knows this stuff better than I do. You know, I'm not going to – I don't even understand. I could read it, and I just want to understand what it's talking about the signature and the timing and all that stuff and the number of notes. There are lots of notable recordings of this. You have from 1962 and even in 1990. You have Wynton Marsalis. He recorded a version of it that was done with the roll of bells being carried by brass. Again, I don't know what that means. John Williams did a version of this also in 1990.
For Home Alone.
For Home Alone, exactly. You know, not for Die Hard, but Home Alone is still fine. David Foster did a version of it in 1983. Are you familiar with David Foster's work?
I don't think I am.
So he's done some great movie songs. Did you ever see the movie Stealing Home?
No, never even heard of it.
With Jodie Foster and Mark Harmon.
It's actually a baseball film?
Very good. What a guess.
That's a guess.
I said I know. I realized it was a guess.
It's a sport term I know.
Yes. He did music for The Bodyguard, St. Elmo's Fire, Secret of My Success. So yeah, he's done some great stuff over time. So I've heard of him before. So to see him jump out here as, you know, on this list is great. I know he did the theme song. You ever see Secret of My Success?
No, I haven't.
With Michael J. Fox and Helen Slater.
I'm aware of it, but I haven't seen it.
No. Okay. So that's a fun movie. And so he sings the main song there, which is called The Price of Love, which he wrote and it was sung by Roger Daltrey, and also the song The Secret of My Success, which was performed by Night Ranger. So those are two great songs that I've always enjoyed. Yes. So he did the instrumental for Stealing Home. And then the theme song of the movie is When She Danced, that he also wrote. And it was performed by Marilyn Martin and David Foster. He did the singing of it also. So, yeah. So, yes, he also did Secret of My Success. So he's one of the people who did a version of Carol and the Bells. You have a whole bunch of others, but I don't think we really need to get into any of them at this point. As you said, Home Alone is probably the most famous one, and that version is it went very high. And you'll be happy to hear that there's another version that was a Muppets version of the song.
Yes, I am aware of that as well, yes.
You are. In 2009, so there's a parody of songs that, Animal is very much a part of. And this actually became a viral video during the Christmas season.
Yeah, there's a bell dropping on speaker, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And then, John continues walking and we hear someone scream from the side, "Yeah, I know that, Larry." And then he walks up to tries to brush off the snow from his coat, which, as we talked about earlier this week, is fake snow.
It's probably paper. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. And he walks past the British Airways ticketing counter. Now, I found this interesting. Yesterday, we talked about the fact that they had the fake counter for NEA. You know, so now why are they giving us a real one for British Airways as opposed to, later on, we're going to find out that there is a different. You have Windsor Air. Would have been better if they showed us Windsor Air, isn't it?
There's multiple British airlines, I guess. They show us Windsor Air because that plane goes down and stays down.
Yes.
Whereas they wouldn't want to do that with a real flight. And is NEA, is that the flight that Holly's on?
Yes.
Yeah. So I guess they can show like real airline companies when they're not putting them in a negative manner.
Right. Right. Okay. No, obviously I don't think there any real airline was willing to allow them to use their names here. So which is why it surprises me that they actually have here, the name of British Air.
I see. Yeah.
That's the thing. My thought was is that they would every one of the airlines they used here were fake airlines. I mean, I believe the Japanese airline that we see is a fake airline. I don't remember currently what the name of the airline is. We'll get there in a few weeks. That's the idea. They can't use real airlines for these type of things, especially when dealing with disasters.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to see that. Yeah. And then John walks by an information booth and we hear a TV that's on next to the woman in the ticket booth. Her name is Connie Lillian Thiemann. She only has three IMDb credits. Interestingly enough, the other two credits besides this movie are on L.A. Law and NYPD Blue. NYPD Blue with Dennis Franz and L.A. Law because John's in L.A. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. One in L.A., one in D.C., one in New York.
That's right.
She works in the big cities.
Yeah, apparently. Both of them are polite to one another the way that they talk. He says, "Hi, where are the telephones?" And she says, "Right over there. Thank you very much." But the important thing here is to listen to what's going on the TV. She has a little TV next to her that is giving us more exposition as to what's going on in this movie. So we hear someone say, "Snow flurries along the northeastern seaboard." And then continues by saying, "Leonard Atkins is in a warmer climate with a story that grows hotter by the minute." And then it switches to the reporter, Leonard Atkins, saying, "Security was tight today at Escalon Airport in Valverde, where government authorities report that deposed General Ramon Esperanza." And as we're talking, the scene is going to change slightly. And now we're in a motel room where we're listening to the rest of this. Now I'm just going to read through the rest of the information, and then we'll talk about what's actually going on here. So he says, "Where government authorities report that deposed General Ramon Esperanza will be delivered to the extradition to the U.S. Only 2 years ago, General Esperanza led his country's army in a campaign against communist insurgents, a campaign fought with American money and advisors. Esperanza's fall from power caused ripples in his country's recent election and closer to home as well, when high-ranking Pentagon officials were charged with supplying him. And then that'll be the end of the dialogue this minute. But we're not here to talk about the dialogue, are we?
Like, before we move on, I have found out who played Leonard Atkins. It's played by Bob Braun, B-R-A-U-N, who is a radio and TV personality. Born in 1929, passed away in 2001. He was inducted into the Cincinnati Radio Hall of Fame in 1993.
Inducted or indicted?
Inducted. Okay. Inducted.
I thought you said indicted.
I did. That was a mistake. He was in three films. He was in Die Hard 2. He was in The Skin. And he was in Defending Your Life, which he played a talk show host in 91.
He's known. It just calls him a newscaster.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's a TV and radio host. He had the Bob Braun Show from 67 to 84. It had the highest Arbitron and Nielsen ratings of any live entertainment information program in the Midwestern United States.
Oh, wow. How did you figure out that this is him?
I Googled Leonard Atkins Die Hard 2, and it came up with the Die Hard Wiki, a fandom page, which has that credit as him being played by Bob Braun.
Okay. All right. Very good. Thank you for that, Jay. I was looking at IMDb and it says newscaster, so I thought it was, you know, later on one of the other newscasters. I wasn't sure which one it was. And when I tried looking up who Bob Braun was, I didn't find anything. So thank you. Thank you for that. So I appreciate that.
No worries. Yes, but as you say, we're not here to talk about reporting. We're here to talk about William Sadler's bear.
That's right. So as this is all happening, we have a character who we don't know who he is yet. Anyone who's familiar with the actor, William Sadler, who has been in many movies. He was in a number of Stephen King adaptations, including Shawshank, including The Green Mile. He's
a Frank Marshall guy. Yeah.
He was in this movie, obviously. He was also in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
He's the president in Iron Man 3.
Correct. Yes.
I love William Sadler. He's
yes.
He's one of those, like that guy. One of the first kind of that guys. I feel like I loved Shawshank as a kid and Green Mile and all kinds of things. One of those guys. I was like, oh, it's him. He's in this one.
Yeah. I mean, I reached out to him, but he didn't respond to me yet. I'm still waiting for him to respond. Hopefully, he will.
I hope so too. But he trained for like 7 months to shape this role.
No, what do you for this role? For this scene. For this scene, he did it.
Which I saw an interview with him. He did not know he was going to be nude until the costume fitting, in quotes, where he thought it was just going to be like, yeah, exercising in a hotel room, fine. But when he found out, like, oh no, you're going to be naked, he requested that it be pushed to the end of the shoot.
Yeah.
So that he could get in better shape, which I think that's a lot of commitment for what is like less than a minute of screen time of him being naked.
Yeah.
And it is an odd decision, but I think it worked.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that you've been waiting a very long time to talk about this ever since we did Die Hard, even before when my first thought was to automatically jump into Die Hard 2. So probably for about a year, you've been waiting to talk about the fact that he is doing naked Tai Chi.
Well, yeah, so I'm always very happy to be the first guest on your shows, but it also means I never get to pick what minutes I get, where some of your other guests might, or you might assign them. I feel like even if I wasn't your first guest always on these shows, I would still have been assigned, I was probably still would have picked the William Sadler introduction for Die Hard 2.
So there you
just
go.
Just because...
It worked out, you see, yeah, it worked out well.
It worked out nicely. Just because... This is, I think, for me, the most memorable aspect of the film.
The most memorable aspect is the fact that it opens with a man naked doing Tai Chi?
I mean, yes.
Okay.
As villain introductions go, if you don't know, this is the villain of the film. This is Colonel Stewart. It's pretty goddamn memorable. I know that, yes, you have Alan Rickman. I first see him in an elevator or approaching the elevator. It's still a good introduction. I would argue this is a better villain intro from the Die Hard franchise.
Because it's just ridiculous. So crazy and out there. That's what it comes down to.
Yes, it's ridiculous. I'm sure there are some people who do make a Tai Chi in a hotel room. Fine, whatever. But it's such a bizarre way to introduce one of your main characters in a way that never pays off. Like he does do some martial arts towards the end of the film. This shows he's kind of a driven, determined, focused guy. But he's doing Tai Chi naked in a hotel room, watching a news article about the guy he's trying to save. Spoiler alert. And like the look of like the furious determination on William Sadler's face as he's doing it. It's ridiculous.
Yes. And I definitely agree with you on that point for sure.
And the fact that he spent some like 7 months training for these like 30 seconds.
Yes.
You think that's the amount of training that would go into Chris Hemsworth in a Thor film these days, where he's half naked for the entire film.
But he's not doing Tai Chi.
He's not doing Tai Chi. Maybe he is in his training, but I just love that that's how we introduce this guy.
Right. Okay.
I am a big fan of the transition as well, of how we get from John McClane walking through an airport to him, of like, yes, he talks to the lady at the desk. She's watching the news on her TV. Should she be doing that at work? Probably not. I don't know. But then I guess
we all sometimes do things at work that we're not supposed to be doing.
Yes. and so essentially she is looking at a news article about a guy who's flying into their airport later that day. So it could be, it's relevant, I guess.
Yes.
But she's watching the TV. We kind of zoom out. We cut to another guy watching the TV, the same TV on the ground.
He happens to be on the same channel.
Exactly. But then he's not completely naked. He's still wearing his ring and his gold watch. And when his
hand... if someone is wearing a ring and a gold watch, so they're not naked.
They are articles of clothing.
Okay. I don't know if they're articles of clothing. They're ornaments.
I'd say articles. My dog isn't naked. He's wearing a collar.
But he's got a lot of fur.
he had a groom yesterday. He's got less than he had. But... I love that it's not just that he's doing naked Tai Chi. Our first introduction to this guy is his hands being thrust into the screen with a real musical cue, sting of ding. It comes out of it's jarring. It's surprising that it's. I just love this intro for this character. It's great.
Okay, no, I agree. I think it's great. But like you said, I'm disappointed from the just as you are that this doesn't pay off anywhere else besides having one fight on the wing of an airplane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A problem I have with Die Hard 2 is the villains aren't as good as in Die Hards 1, 3, maybe even 4. Since there's too many. They have, it'll come up later on, but there's kind of too many and they all do a little bit and there's no like big, this is the main bad guy. Correct. This is who we're on here.
True. But that's part of the surprise of the movie and stuff like that by doing it that way. You know, that it's a team. So I don't know.
It's
I hear what you're saying about that for sure.
When Die Hard 2 first won Movie of the Month over on the Lambcast Christmas special, the term we came up with for the bad guys was a sphincter of art.
Yes.
There's so many lower level bad guys in this film, but no main one. I have to credit Will Slater for explaining helicopter for coming up with that term. Still one of my favorite things he's ever come up with. As a collective term for our
sphincter. Yes. That's true. It makes sense. Right. So here he's doing this Tai Chi. We're not really sure why he's doing the Tai Chi, but what's good is it shows that he's calm, or he's calming himself about what he's about to do, you know, which we don't know yet what he's about to do. We'll find that out over the course of the next few weeks, what exactly his plans are. But...
And the shape he's in, you can kind of assume this is like a daily morning ritual for him. He just kind of gets up, does his Tai Chi, has a shower, gets dressed, and goes about his day of terrorizing airports.
Right, but we also don't know what time it is. Because, you know, when John is outside, because of all the snow, you can't really tell if it's, You know, is it just overcast or is it, you know, towards dusk? Who knows? So this isn't something he's doing his first thing in the morning.
He's wearing a watch, goddammit. And you can kind of just about see, it looks to be about 4:15. Sorry, no, 4:45. Given it's a difficult angle to look at that watch. I think the minute hand is looking around the 9 to 10 region, and the hour hand is between the 3 and the 4. So that would make it, yeah, about 3:45, 3:50 in the afternoon.
Okay, which makes sense.
Is my guess, yeah.
You know, it also means that Holly is not working on Friday. She took the day off because in order to take the red, she's not taking a red eye that's going to show up first thing in the morning.
She strikes me as somebody who would work on a plane.
Well, we know she's working on the plane, but still, she's not in the office.
Yes, true.
So,
hang on, there is no. I was scanning back through the minute, and I thought I saw the time somewhere else, but it's not. It's flight information.
Yeah, there's flight information. I mean, maybe tomorrow we'll get to see when his beeper goes off. Maybe there's a time that is stated there. But I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
We'll find out tomorrow.
That's right. So they mentioned Valverde, okay? I'm assuming you've heard of Valverde before.
Is it some kind of like a source?
No. So Valverde is a fictional country that is constantly used by Hollywood writer and producer Stephen E. D'Souza, which it's a South or Central American locale. They couldn't use real ones. So he made one up. The first appearance of this, the name of this country was in Commando.
I just had to say, Valverde is also the brand of a pasta sauce.
It could
That's
be.
Where I got that from.
Okay. The name translates as a green valley.
Yep, that makes sense. Right. Yeah.
Yes. And it actually has appeared in many TV and movies. Maybe TV shows and movies. So first one obviously is Commando. Okay, the character played by Dan Hedaya is the former ruler of Valverde, and he's the one who sends Matrix to kill the current president, or he's trying to send Matrix to kill the first president, the current president. But you know, eventually somehow John Matrix gets to a different country where Dan Hedaya is. That's where he kills everybody. You know, but Valverde is the country where he's supposed to be taking over killing the current president.
He carries a giant tree the entire time. It's an odd choice.
Yes, that's true. Very. The TV show Supercarrier has an episode where in one of the episodes they actually dock in the country Valverde just as civil war is breaking out. This movie, obviously, we deal with Valverde. The TV show Adventures, Inc., there was an episode that was titled Plague Ship of Valverde. In the comic book Sheena, it takes place in Valverde. Now, according to D'Souza, he believes that Predator takes place in Valverde. They never really mention what country that takes place in. There's a movie that you might have heard of called Jurassic Attack, which takes place entirely in Valverde.
We'll see this film.
No, okay. There's a horror film called The Theta Girl, which things take place in the quote-unquote full country of Valverde. The TV show NCIS has an episode where they travel to Valverde, or they mention it. And then in the movie Commando Ninja, one of the settings in the movie is in the country of Valverde. So it's really interesting that he, you know, creates this fake locale in order, you know, it's like a general South / Central American country that you can do whatever you want with.
Well, one of the actors from Jurassic Attack is Vernon Wells from Commando.
Ah, there you go.
He will only work on films set in Valverde.
Yes. Yeah. Does he die in that one too?
Probably. Agent Grimaldi is his name. That's something someone who's going to die.
It's a possibility. That's very true. Basically, one of the things that they allude to here, and we'll get more into it as the movie goes on, but they allude to the Iran-Contra affair and Panama with Noriega. The whole idea of you know, sending weapons the U.S. sending weapons to a South/Central American country, and then dealing with drugs also, because that was part of what Noriega did and stuff like that. So I find it interesting that they, you know, this all happened right around that time. I mean, Panama was 1989. So, you know, and William Sadler's character, Colonel Stewart, is supposedly similar to Colonel Oliver North, who was a big part of the Iran-Contra affair. But we'll get more into that later on. Not in this episode. So, Jay, you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
No.
All right.
I do not.
Okay. So the script is very descriptive here. So it starts off with Christmas music wafting through the building from a school choir perched in front of a massive three-story window. Blasé travelers pause in their hectic rush to applaud the angelic voices. McLean shoves his way through some people. When they glare at him, he quickly applauds the kids. Pulls up in an information booth. The girl there is watching a little TV on the shelf out of sight from the public. So there you go. That's how she's doing it while she's working. She's making sure that nobody sees it. The newscaster says, and the white Christmas may be here for a while if that new storm front moves from the metro area this afternoon as predicted. So again, that wasn't really needed. You know, they did it better in the movie where they just say snow flurries along the northeastern seaboard. Gives us an idea that there is snow happening. And then later on, when Leonard Atkins is talking, he says, security was tight today at Escalon Airport in the Republic of Valverde, where government authorities escorted General Ramon Esperanza to the military transport that will bring him to the United States to stand trial for narcotics trafficking. So there, it's very succinct explaining what it is that he did. And then it changes, and it says a hand thrusts in front of the camera, fingers clenching and curling oddly. A half-naked man is doing Tai Chi exercises. This is Colonel William Stewart, USA retired. His body is hard, with scars from knives and bullets. And then it continues with the newscaster, and then it says, it calls Esperanza. It says, only 2 years ago, the controversial general led his country's army. And then it says at the end, picture changes to some Washington steps. The American colonel we just saw exits a federal building with some junior officers and attorneys, avoids reporters. So, you know, according to the script, they're making it so that we know for a fact that it's Stewart who's on all these files in these the pictures that they show here, because this is something that you know, we're not clear of unless they specifically say it, but it's not really something you can do. There's not much you can do for this to change the idea. So yeah, that's all I got for the script. Yeah. So every Wednesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Airplane Airport Edition, where my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that happened to them over the course of their life that has something to do with an airport or an airplane. So Jay, you got a story for us?
Yeah, I've been quite fortunate to fly a lot. I love flying, but I haven't had a lot of like terribly interesting things happen on planes or airports. But when we did, I think it was Planes, Trains, Automobiles, we did travel stories, and I think I mentioned that I've been to China,
England twice.
Twice, yes, with work. And the second time...
Yeah, I remember that.
The second time I went on my own, first time with my boss. And I was there for like 2 weeks. Horrible time I had. The intention was to bring back a suitcase full of parts. Parts. I worked for an engineering company that made plastic components. We had to get some components made in China. We had to work perfectly to go over there and oversee the production. And then come back with a suitcase full of them because we needed them urgently. And... the company that we were working with were quite lax in terms of their customs, shall we say, like how you go through things to declare. And they gave me a receipt of like, this is just like 20 quid worth of stuff. And I had to say to them, no, please put the correct amount of stuff on here, because everyone had been joking that I'm going to get caught in customs and sent to prison for like trafficking goods, which it was all completely legal and above board, but. You know how people are. So I insisted that they put the right value. Everything went fine in terms of getting the goods back. But I ended up having to be at Hong Kong airport for like 6 hours. So I was so paranoid I was going to miss my flight and everything. So I just my suitcase in, and I had to do a podcast when I got home on the Magnificent Seven and its remakes. So I ended up watching Battle Beyond the Stars, a bad film, on a small laptop in Hong Kong Airport whilst I was waiting there for a flight, which didn't go well. Also, I love flying. And that's a bad film to watch like in public. There's a lot of shots of near nudity and kind of lascivious shots and things. Just to watch in public, it feels a bit odd and a bit off. But I'm dedicated to my podcast, so I did it anyway. So I found a little corner in Hong Kong Airport and watched it on a laptop, as I'm sure Roger Corman intended.
I'm sure.
I love flying so much that I love watching films on planes. It's always... I mean, I'd love being like stuck in a metal tube for 12 hours. All you could do is watch films. That's heaven to me. And so I didn't want to miss out on any of that, but it had been quite such a long day. I thought, oh, I'm going to fall asleep on this plane. So I took a Pro Plus, like a caffeine pill, so that I'd stay awake for the entirety of the flight just to watch films. Seems like a ridiculous decision. I ended up...
Not at all.
Sat down on the plane.
That makes sense.
But I ended up like getting on the plane, sat down, and I just passed out. I just fell asleep. Because I was so tired, and this is the best way to have a nap, apparently, is to take a caffeine pill when you're tired. So you'll have like a 20-minute nap, and then you're awake for ages. That's exactly what happened. I missed the entire takeoff. Like, I just woke up, and we were in the air, like an hour into the flight. It was great. I loved it, and I just watched films for the rest of the flight. So it's not the most like exciting story. All these things kind of made it an eventful time for me, that one flight.
Very cool.
And I just watched a bunch of films.
I liked that.
I watched some flights.
Great.
Well, I was like upgraded to premium economy for the only time ever. I had actual cutlery.
Oh, wow.
And an actual China plate on a plane.
From China.
Yeah. Indeed.
That's right. Yeah. All right. Great. Thank you very much for that story, Jay. Do you want to once again tell people where they can find Jay Clewitt?
I mean, I'd much rather do my Harlan Hump Day top five Rennie Harlan films, which I feel like should be done for at least me.
Okay. You can hijack
your show.
Not a problem. Get
number five. Number five, Prison, his audition for making A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, a wonderful film with a young Viggo Mortensen. Long Kiss Goodnight is number four. Number three, Mindhunters. No one else would have Mindhunters in the top five Rennie Harlan films, but I really liked Mindhunters. There's a lot of incredible deaths in that film.
Yes. Puppeteers.
Number two, Cliff. Yes. The liquid nitrogen death, the cigarette. It's a wonderful, wonderful film. Number two, Cliffhanger. Cliffhanger, fantastic film. I think you're a fan of Cliffhanger.
Yes.
Yeah. And you'll never guess my number one. It's Dick Whistley. It's a shark film. It's the perfect film.
What do you think? Die Hard 2 is not even on the film on the list?
Not in my top five Rennie Harlan
films.
You
like Prison more than you like this? Wow.
I did. Prison surprised me. I like them both fine. But I went into Prison thinking this is going to be a terrible film. And it ended up like, there's a barbed wire takes on a mind of its own and kills a guy.
Okay.
In prison.
Right. Well, at least Fort Fairlane is on the list.
Die Hard 2. it would be in my top 10.
Okay.
Yeah, Die Hard 2 will be above Fort Fairlane.
Oh, okay, that's good to know.
I think Die Hard 2 is probably number
6. Yeah, I reached out also to Rennie Harlan. He didn't respond yet, so I'm still waiting.
Yeah,
still
waiting. Been there. We had a guy on from Empire Magazine who mentioned our podcast to Rennie Harlan, and I then emailed Rennie Harlan's publicist and nothing. He's a busy guy.
Apparently, yes.
I don't think he does many podcasts.
All right. What can you do? That's all right. I'm still waiting for Rob Reiner to get back to me. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's the same criteria there. I don't think I've never heard Rob Reiner on a podcast.
Yeah, that's true. I'm jealous, you know, of Bubba Weed, who was able to get Stephen Tobolowsky, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, me too. Hey, he does a lot of podcasts.
Yes.
So that's good. Yeah,
that is true. That is true. But unfortunately, he's not in any of the movies that I've been doing, so it's a problem.
Well, you need to do...
Sneakers.
Sneakers Minute is what you need to do. That's better than what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Jay, you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Yes, of course. That's where it started. Let's go with lifeversusfilm.com is my personal blog. Not a lot happens there, but I wrote a review yesterday.
I was going to say that. Yeah. I was going to say I saw your review yesterday. There you go. It's so you have at least one review in 2023. Review.
Yeah, so, and which is, I mean, one review in the past 2 years. But it happens now and then. My main aim over there is the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. I've recently crossed The Lighthouse off of that list. A film I enjoyed more than you did.
Much more.
Mississippi Burning Minute was what I was going to suggest you do, Mr. Wolowski. not a good film to do.
It's a great movie, but that's not one that I would have on my list to do.
No, I don't think it would be a fun experience to do Mr. Burning Minute. That's it. Lifevsfilm.com, and then you can find me on Twitter at LifeVSfilm as well.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for a Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and